has joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You're the first to arrive, so let's give it another minute or so.
Anna
has joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We will begin with Hashem Yehud.
Okay.
L'shem Yehud kud shabri fuishkin tebit kilu urhimu utkilu utkilu urhimu. Le'afda l'shem yud he bovavte. Be'yehuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limun Torah mitzvah. La'sok Torah mitzvah. Vayhino amadunai Elohino aleinu ma'asei yadeinu kanunei aleinu ma'asei yadeinu kanuneihu. Please join me in saying the Ana Bekoa. Ana Bekoa, Gedulat Shemincha, Tatir, Serura, Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi. Kabel Rinat. Amcha sagvenu, tacharenu, nora, kufre shayen sintet nun. Na gibor, dorshe yehudcha, kevavat shamrem. Nun gimel dalet, yud kashin. Barchem tacharem, rachame sitkatcha, tamid gamlem, betet resh tzaditach gimel. Hasin kadosh, berov tuvcha, na'el adatecha. Petkuf bet tet nunayim. Yachid Geya Lamcha Pane Zobre Kedushateha Yud Gimel Lamed Pe Zayin Ku Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziakatenu Yodeya Ta'alumo Shin Kufav Zadi Yud Taf. And the eighth verse of the Ana Bekoa, we say in a whisper. So to begin, the handout is available on the Unique Astrological Times link. That's underneath the two pictures on the right of every Hashem webpage. It's near the bottom of the page. It's a connection to the section titled Musar. It's the first link under Musar, and it's for the Sefer Tomer Devorah. When that opens up, it's a website called safaria.org, and it lists the 10 chapters of the Sefer Tomer Devorah, and we are beginning today with chapter 7, verse 1. Ein safek shemidat hatiferet hu haesek batorah. Amnam tzarit zehirut gadol shelo yitka adam b'divrei Torah shelo yigrom ra gadola shehare kemo shehu mitgae kach korem shemidat hatiferet shehiyo HaTorah itgae betistalek lemala chaz v'shalom ela kohamash kibil atzmo bedivre Torah gorem el hatiferet sheteret Tashpil atzma lehashpia lamalchut v'harei lemata mehatiferet arba sefirot v'lachen shalosh midot. Chapter 7. How a person can accustom himself with the trait of splendor, which is a translation of the word tiferet. Usually it's referred to as beauty. There is no doubt that the trait of splendor is involvement in Torah. However, a person needs great care not to become haughty with the words of Torah, that he not cause great evil. As behold, just like he becomes haughty, so does he cause the trait of splendor, which is the Torah, to become haughty and withdraw above. God forbid. Rather, anyone that lowers himself with words of Torah causes splendor to descend and lower itself, to flow to kingship. And behold, there are four sephirot full of splendor, and they have three traits. Paragraph 2. Rishona hamitgae al talmidim gorem shehatiferet yitgae v'yitale me'al netzach v'hod shehem limude Hashem talmide hatiferet V'hamashpil atzmo lamada v'ahava gam hatiferet yashpil atzmo el talmidav v'yashpiyem lefika yihye ha'adam noach l'talmidav v'ilamdem kasher yuklun seit v'hatiferet bizkuto yashpia b'limude Hashem kufi b'chinatam aruya aleichem. The first, one who becomes haughty over his students causes splendor to be haughty and rise above victory and majesty, which are those taught of God, the students of splendor. But who one who lowers himself and teaches it with love brings that splendor will also lower itself towards its students and teach them according to what they can carry, and in his merit, splendor will flow upon those taught of God according to their aspect that is fitting for them. The third paragraph. Sheinit hamitgae b'torato al hayani umvaze oto v'hahu Eliyahu Shenitmeh L'Rabbi Shimon Azar. Da ani mikoar niv zevni mas lehakshilo shezachadato alavgina et haani behuhokia alpanav bumo ki hamid gaye. Al-Hani Gorem Shehati Fered Yitkaya Al-Hayasod Velo Yashpia Bo Ve'im Ha'itihye Ta'dato Shel Ha'cham Miyushu Shevet Alav Im He'ani Az hatifered yashpia Be'az yesod lekifa lepika Yach yechshev he'ani me'od etzel Echacham v'yikravenu Ve'hu v'kach yachashev Lemala Ayesod etzel hatiferet Bayit kasher bo. The second, one who makes himself haughty with his Torah over the poor person, like that occurrence of Eliyahu who appeared to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, like an ugly, disgraced, and disgusting poor man, in order to make him stumble, as his head had swelled from his Torah knowledge, and he disgraced that poor man. And so Eliyahu rebuked him for his blemish, as one who is haughty over the poor causes splendor to be haughty over foundation, and not to flow upon it. But if the mind of the sage is settled in his dealings with the poor person, then splendor will flow into foundation. Hence, a poor person should be very important to the sage, and he should bring him close. And so will foundation be considered above to splendor, and the latter will connect with the former. The translation here is taking the names of the Sefirot and translating them. So every time you see foundation, you should change that to be Yesod. And every time you see splendor, you should change that to be Tiferet. The fourth paragraph. Shelishid Hamitkaye Betorato Alama Deyara Shehu Telal Im Hashem Gorem Shehati Feret Yitfkae Me'al HaMalchut Velo Yashpia Ba'ela Yihie Dato Me'orevet Im HaBriot V'kol Im HaYishu Ashuvim lefanav Mifnei sheheim lemata besot Ba'aretz v'chas v'shalom im kore Otam hamorim moridam El haklifot Lekach lo yizke levein sheyiye Bo'or Torah Kirita Habagbara Eile Yitnaheg Imahem Benachad Alpi Darcham Kain Atiferet Shehu Mashpia La Malchudu Manfiga Kefi Ani Yodat Datan Shel Nashim Kala Shabbat Liga 33 Vishlau Zeshelo Itkae Al Kol Palushe Ada At Shahem Biklau Afar Haaretz Umifneze Hakadmonim Lo Hayu Mitkaim Batorah Uda Daravu Amnuna Befarashat Bereshit Ukuvnada Verabi Hagai Uvatikunim Ahusava Deva Ulanashka Leya Parashelohaya Rotsa Behit Gao Bedivre Torah. The third, one who becomes haughty from his Torah upon the people of the land, which is the general people of Hashem, causes splendor to become haughty over kingship and not to flow into it. Rather, his disposition should be pleasant with the creatures and all the people of the settlement. He be important in front of him, as they are below in the secret of the land. And Hashem forbid, God forbid, if he calls them donkeys, he lowers them to the husk. Hence, he will not merit to have a son that will have the light of the Torah within him, as it is found in the Gemara. Rather, he should behave with them gently, according to their way, similar to splendor that flows to kingship and guides her according to the poverty of her mind, as the minds of women are weak. And included in this is that he become not haughty over the weak of mind that are included in the dust of the earth. And because of this, the ancient ones would not become haughty from their Torah, like in that occurrence of Rav Hamuna in the Zohar, in Parashat Bereshit, and like the occurrence of Rabbi Haggai, and in the Tikkunim, the end of the Tikkun 26, of that elder who fled what they wanted to kiss him. He who fled when they wanted to kiss him, as he did not want to become haughty with words of Torah. Paragraph 5. Yehiye ragil biyoto no seve no tein b'divrei Torah lekawen el hikunei shekina letachna ukashta el hatiferet teheinu halaka el haemet zehu makloket l'shem Shemayim v'haynu Chesed u'gbura Lavo el hatiferet Shemayim l'haskim halakaimo V'kol machloket Sheyetze min hashura Hazot b'yibadel Mimenu ki lo yirtzah hatiferet Vehitachaz v'achutz afilu Sheyiyeh b'divrei Torah imhu lekanter sofa gehinom Chaz v'shalom v'ein lecha Bachloket Shelo Yifgam Vati Shekhet HaTorah L'Shem Shemayim Shekhoi Netivotecha Shalom Be'ahava B'sofa. He should also be accustomed in his going back and forth, his discussion and his argument, in the words of Torah, to intend the reparation of the divine presence, to repair it and adorn it to splendor, which is the law to the truth. And this in the meaning of a disagreement for the sake of heaven, which is for kindness and severity to come to splendor, the heavens to have the law correspond to it. And he should separate from any disagreement that goes out of this line, as splendor will not want to grasp what is outside, even it be with words of Torah. If it is just to argue, its end will be Gehinnom, God forbid. And you have no disagreement that does not harm splendor, besides a disagreement of the Torah for the sake of the heavens, as all of its paths are peace, and love is at its end. The sixth paragraph. Wehaokel hanao midibre no Torah goga pogem ma bamida hazot shehio kodesh umatzia el dibre chol v'kasher yaaso b'Torah lahanaat gaboha Ashrei helko beikar hakol uletzaref dato b'mivchen hamakshava u'pashpait da'erech mi'asa u'matan im yimate Shaimayet Yairobat Devar Yachazor Bo Olam Yode Al Haemet Haemet Kidei Sheimatze Sham Hatiferet Midad Emet. And one who consumes pleasures from the words of the Torah hurts this trait, as it is holy and he makes its words of the mundane. But when one is involved in words of Torah for the pleasure of the higher realm, happy is his portion, and the essence of everything is to refine his mind through the aspect of thought and to examine himself by way of give and take. If there be found a trace of an improper thing, he should go back on it, and he should always concede to the truth, so that splendor, the trait of truth, will be found there. Now, it's obvious that we still have a lot of time. But we will not have enough time to finish chapter 8. So let's discuss through questions chapter 7. It's talking about Tiferet, and it's trying to explain the central column. And what is the essence of Tiferet? The translation is beauty or splendor, but it's cautioning us to be at the level of splendor, to be at the level of Tiferet, such that we teach Netzach and Hod and Yesod, that we don't hold it over them, that we don't try and bring them up to us, but we go down to them. This is what's important. This is what is being taught, among other things that are being taught, in section 6, or chapter 6. So does anybody have any questions? Well,
I don't know if this is the way to explain it, but it's kind of what I see, is that because Netzach and Hod represent the legs, you know, the two legs on the human body, that you're putting the central column into action. I mean, that's the picture I got when you said what you did.
Okay. Netzach and Hod are the legs.
Right.
But Netzach and Hod are the level of prophecy. So do you consider prophecy on a level with beauty, with Tiferet? Or is prophecy above Tiferet? When you look at the glyph of the Tree of Life, you see Tiferet higher than Netzach and Hod, but lower than Chesed and Gevurah. You see Tiferet is literally the center of the tree when you go from above to below, or you're climbing from below to above. The center, the balance point, is Tiferet. Is Netzach and Hod below Tiferet? From its appearance on the tree, it is. But in reality, Tiferet should be above Chesed and Gevurah, because Tiferet balances those two essences. If you look at the level of the mind, at the level of Keter, Chachma, and Bina, Keter is above Chesed and Gevurah. And we have this very strange dotted circle called Dot, which is below Chesed and Gevurah. But Dot is not a Sephirah. So Keter, the balance, is always above what it is joining together. But we don't see that in the tree. When it comes to emotions, we see that there's loving kindness and there's restraint, and Tiferet is the balance point, and it is below those two, not above them. And the same thing applies to the legs and to the sexual organ. But in the body, the sexual organ is literally higher than the legs. But it really isn't, because the legs start at the hips. And that's higher than the sexual organ. So it is very confusing. Where does it belong? Where does the balance point belong? Above what it is balancing, or below what it is balancing? And that confusion is what Rabbi Ashlag refers to when he talks about the tree. When he says, don't look at the glyph, don't look at the diagram, it's going to limit you, it's going to confuse you. Because we don't understand how we go from two dimensions to four dimensions. Because if you have four dimensions, then the balance point can be in one frame of reference, one aspect. It can both be below, but in another aspect, it can be above. And that's why it's limiting. That diagram is very limiting. And I'm asking you to disregard what you've seen. And that's almost impossible to do. Rabbi Ashlag, don't ever see it. But it's very hard once you've seen it to eliminate it. Go ahead, Hannah. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay. I really wasn't thinking of the glyphs. I was thinking of the Tetragrammaton in the shape of the human figure. And then my second thought was with Tiferet as pictured as the sun, the S-U-N. I was trying to muddle that all with what you were saying, because what you were saying reminded me of returning light and direct light, or direct light and returning light. So all of these frames of reference were battling back and forth in my third eye, I guess I should say, eyesight, as you were talking. And I have an inkling of what you're saying. I can't say I understand it completely, but when you speak of different frames of reference, well, it makes it a little bit more understandable. And in between, I'm getting texts from New Orleans that our grandchildren are in the middle of a now category 2. So it's a lot going on.
I understand. I know that there was supposed to be landfall today from the Zebra, whatever it's the name is, what starts with a Z, hurricane.
It's Z-E-T-A.
The essence of the discussion is, what is splendor? What is Tiferet? What is the sun, S-U-N? Go around the sun, and yet human beings think of the earth as more important than the sun.
Mm-hmm.
All of these different aspects have to come together, and you have to try and put them together in your mind, in your mind's eye, as Hannah said, but at the same time you have to know that limits them. What is Tiferet? It's simply the balance point. But what does the balance point mean? It means you have two opposites, and they come together in an aspect of balance, of equality. But what does that truly mean? What does it being equal mean? How do we understand equality? It's a question that people are asking themselves probably for the first time in history. Historically, this country started out by saying there was a group of people that were not equal. They said that this group of people known as the Negro, the American, Black, whatever term we wish to use in whichever generation, we learned that through some semblance of order, a Black person, a Negro, counted as 3/4 of being human. Well, obviously, in our world today, that's very offensive. But in 200 years ago, the offense made logical sense to that generation. It was a way of finding balance. Is it accurate? Is it acceptable today? No. A human being, just like a white person, they're equal, but they're not equal. When we see a Black person, we have different emotions than we see a white person. What does equal mean? In Kabbalah, equal means acceptance by the left column of dominance of the right column, but just barely dominance. They're not giving up their freedoms, but they are accepting the dominance of the right column. That's equal. That's the definition of equal. Is that a definition of equal? Not really. We have very many different definitions of the word equal. And we have to try and reconcile that. And it becomes confusing when we look at the Tree of Life glyph. Where is Tiferet? Is it above Chesed and Gevurah? Is it below Chesed and Gevurah? If it's above it, it's sitting in the location of Dat. If it's below it, what does it say? Tiferet is the highest point. We say Jacob is the complete person, not Abraham and not Isaac. But yet after the tikkun, after the correction, Isaac is going to be the complete person. These are all metaphors, of course. And how do we understand metaphor and at the same time recognize ourselves? Where do you see yourself in a metaphor? These are things that take contemplation. They're difficult to reconcile. But reconcile them we must. Why? Because when you don't reconcile them, you limit yourself. And when you do reconcile them, you come to paradoxes. Because you use the same words, but it's describing different frames of reference. And therefore, it's the same word, but in a different frame of reference has a different meaning. It's reconciliation.
Well, for me right now, I kind of have two definitions or frame of references. And that's one is the unity of all things within Hashem. And I think the second one that I'm coming to see is how total dependence on Hashem for everything. That you can't expect a rabbi, you can't expect your mate, you can't expect your friend to what? Come to your rescue or whatever. It's just total dependence on Hashem for everything. And that doesn't even explain the meaning either, even within myself. It's just coming to grips with the best I can explain to it at this stage in my life.
And I understand your words. Many people will not. Does that mean that they're wrong? No. It's just part of the process. So to have those words explained, they mean something to someone. They mean it to me. Makes clear. But the operative words in those words you expressed, Tana, is in Hashem. Everything is in Hashem, which means we're looking at things from the frame of Hashem. When we look at the things from the frame of Hashem, everything is in Hashem. There's nothing outside of Hashem. Well, but I'm me. And I say Hashem, I'm not saying Hashem in me. And I don't want to say me in Hashem, because that gives up my independence, for lack of better description. Sorry, in Hashem. What does it mean to be in? Everything is in Hashem. Everything's unified. But there's a frame of reference.
That unity, isn't that middle column?
That is the middle colon. But the middle colon is not unified. The middle column can be one side is touching the other side. Or the middle column can be all the letters are interspersed with each other. They're both unified, but they're different aspects of unity, aren't they? How do you see the middle column? One side is touching the other? Or one has interspersed the letters within it, within the others? These are different levels. They're different ways of understanding. They're different aspects of the process of going from Malchut to Keter. You go from Malchut to Keter, from manifestation to potential, you have to pass through something called Tiferet, something called the middle. When I go from right to left, I can understand one side touching the other. But can I understand the bottom touching the top? It's a different frame of reference. It's a different way to comprehend. Very difficult. How do you reconcile this? I'm me, and then there's Hashem. Well, that means that Hashem is outside of me. But how can I be outside of Hashem? Is there really two things, Hashem and me? No, there's not two things. There's only one thing. I'm in Hashem. But that's that empty space that allows me to be me and not lose myself in the concept of being in Hashem. And make you crazy. Then you can't reconcile them logically. And that's when you reach a point where you say, what I feel, that's what's real. You reach a point where feelings just are. They're not logical. They just come into being. I react, I become angry. I react to beauty, I fall in love. Oh, but you're falling in love with something that's skin deep. Is that beauty? Beauty is deeper than the skin. All of these things, how do you reconcile what you perceive? And then you're trying to explain it to other people, and you're using logic, but logic is not complete. Logic is an illusion.
But is his left hand under my head and his right hand embraces me? Is that logic? I don't think so.
There will be people who will tell you, yes, it is logical. Because if my left hand is under your head,
which is left
then
column,
where is the right side? It means that the male is lying on his left side. He cannot be having his hand under your head if he's in front of you, or can he? Different pictures of the same thing, isn't it? If he's in front of you when his left hand is under your head, how can his right hand embrace you? His right hand would then be also under your head or under the back, touching your back. I'm describing different pictures because I'm saying to you, these different pictures are metaphors. So the statement, his left hand is under my head, his right hand embraces me, is describing a picture that can only be him lying on his left side. What does that mean? It means his right side is above his left side. And that's the relationship between the right column and the left column.
But then he kisses me with the kisses of his mouth. That's what follows.
Which means that you're both on the same level.
I have to ponder that. I don't know quite what that means.
Well, a woman is smaller than a man, generally speaking. What does that mean? Why is that? Why do women don't grow as tall as men?
But because when you take
the metaphor in Kabbalah is that the woman and the men started out equal in height. As one aspect, I'm not saying it, all aspects, but they started out equal. But she was asked to diminish herself. So her head, in a normal way of our thinking, the top of a woman's head comes to the chin of the man. Now, we know many relationships, the top of a woman's head is to his chest. But we also know relationships where the top of the woman's head is at his nose. I'm giving you different pictures to help you reconcile all of these different aspects of Tiferet.
Which is very good. Thank you.
You know, we read in the Ari, he describes it as that Tiferet has three thirds. Three different thirds. What are the three thirds? Keter, Chachma, and Bina is one third. Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet is a second third. Netzach, Hod, Yesod is a third. And Zeranpin can rise back into the womb of Bina. But it can go one third, or it can go two thirds, or it can go all the way up as three thirds. These are pictures, right? These are metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
And the movement of the Sephirot relative to each other. In Chachma, enter Malchut. In order for Chachma to enter Malchut, a human being would have to bend over, wouldn't it? But are you talking about Malchut of the head, Malchut of the body, Malchut of all ten? These are different pictures, different metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
It's all related to contemplation. It's all related to meditation. It's all related to inviting something into your meditation and asking it questions and let it answer you. And as it answers you, you get a different picture, a different understanding. But it's always referring to a frame of reference. Without a frame of reference, the picture is meaningless. Because it isn't complete. You have a stairwell and it has a landing. So it's really two stairwells. But you're only going from the first floor to the second floor. So how can you have two stairwells? Because it's a process. You go up one stairwell, you stand on that landing. Did you get to the second floor? No. You still got more to go. That's called reincarnation, isn't it? You never thought of a reincarnation as a framework of stairs, did you?
No, I don't think I have.
But it's a way of understanding. It's my way of understanding. Doesn't mean it's right for you. That's why I try and give you many different pictures so that you can find one that works for you, so that you can reconcile these opposites. And that's what beauty is. That's what splendor is. Reconciling opposites. That's a whole different thought, isn't it?
Yes.
That's something you didn't ever think of.
And
but for me, that's what beauty is. I can see a beautiful woman, but true beauty is reconciling opposites.
Monk?
Yes. Go ahead, Monica.
What I got out of all of this, and you know, I've kind of experienced some of this, but, you know, the left side, right side, female, male, it's that type of relationship where the female soul is higher than the male soul. And if you study Kabbalah or Zohar, you know that. So in humbling the female sign, humbling herself to be under her husband, even though she knows that she's a higher soul, and she humbles not to outshine her husband, but to live within his arms. And to me, that's the left arm under her head and the right hand, you know, enclosing me. To me, that's a beautiful metaphor for what we're discussing. And I, you know, I'm Taurus, you know, that's, you know, I was born in April, which is ER. And I am a very headstrong doer, shaker and doer. And it really, I have to stop and think about things, about the hierarchy here. That, yeah, I may be able to do that task, and I may be able to do it better, something, than the male side. But I have to pull myself back and let the male be the one to initiate some of those things. And if the male asks a question or says, you know, what do you think, or how would you do it, then at that point, which I already probably knew what to do in that task, would have been a lot easier sometimes. That to me is splendor. That to me is fair. That to me is humbling yourself by pulling back, even in knowledge and strength and everything in your body it can do. I've learned a valuable lesson in all these teachings. And believe you me, it's difficult. It's difficult sometimes for me to sit back and let things happen. I don't let it get to the point where they're going to hurt themselves or, you know, cause financial doom, that sort of thing. And I'm definitely not boasting about myself at all. I'm just saying that I have these traits about me. And it took time to pull back being the female aspect, letting the male be who he is. So that's my thoughts.
They gave me pictures that I hadn't ever heard or thought of before, but you know, there's truth in what you say. You know, we look at nature. So let's look at the species known as peacock. The male peacock preens itself. It's got these beautiful feathers as its tail. Well, the operative word in there is tail. Tail means malchut. Tail means the end. But he's so proud of his tail. The female, she's less lustrous. She doesn't have the tail feathers. Does she feel a lack? Probably not. The male thinks he's important. Well, he'll learn his lesson. That's part of the women's movement of our generation. The male has to learn that he doesn't know, that he needs the woman to pull him up to Beta. She's already there. He can't climb on his own.
And I must tell you this. My mother raised birds, and she had peacocks. And I could not go in the backyard because the peacock would chase me. I was so afraid of it. But I can still see those beautiful feathers, you know. And he'd come running after me, and I was scared to death. I'd run back into the house. I don't like examples of peacocks. Oh, well, you live long enough, you experience just about anything anybody has a conversation about. So.
And all I can literally, I have never seen a peacock except on Channel 4 on television.
Well, they were a favorite bird of Solomon. He loved peacocks. But I will say this, what Malka was saying was really another picture of what I was trying to say or had meaning behind when I said that total dependence on Hashem. There's no way to explain it, but I can tell you that her whole conversation was in that statement. We reach a point where we see total dependence on Hashem for everything. I'm seeing that with having to deal with all of these aftermath of Laura that were things I didn't have to deal with. That was something Tony had to deal with.
Right.
But in reality, with dealing with him, with dealing with the house, with having been gone for 2 weeks and coming back to everything unpacking and repacking, you know, for hospital and house and cooking something for him. I mean, he really can't help himself. I can't do it all. But I'm seeing that there's this peace. I'm not upset. You know, I'm not depressed. And it's because I'm letting Hashem do it for me. Do everything for me. Tell me what's the next step.
Well, and everything you're saying is really clear and straightforward. But now change the sentence. Your sentence is, I'm depending on Hashem to do everything for everything. Now,
in other words, how to do the next step. What's the next
I understand what you're saying. I'm asking you to now, instead of saying I'm depending on Hashem, I'm depending in Hashem. It changes the meaning.
O to I. O to I instead of on to in. Okay. That's how we remember it.
And that's, you know, you're not wrong. You are right. Okay? But is depending in Hashem, is that also right or is it wrong? These are the things, questions you have to ask. And this is how you grow as you evaluate what does it mean to be in Hashem versus on Hashem. We live on the earth, do we? We live in the universe, do we? Look at these prepositions or whatever they're called. These connecting words are really significant.
Some days it's in and some days it's on. And whatever it is, I get the answer. So there we go back to prophecy, you know, to me.
Exactly.
you know, we're going full circle. Very good conversation today.
I agree. You all have a beautiful afternoon.
Okay.
And I remind you that we have two more classes, which is the Deep Zohar. And at 7 o'clock, it's questions and answers. But it will also go right into our study of Rachel Imenu and Methuselah. And how are we going to reconcile Methuselah and Rachel being the same day? They chose the same day to leave the earth. Why? An interesting class, I think. And I don't promise to answer the question, just ask it. You have a beautiful day.
Okay, you too. You too, Malcolm.
Shalom, shalom, gadol to everyone.
Shalom,
gadol.